So, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Prasad Chari. I am 28 years old and I'm a Swedish order member. I live in Stockholm. I have been ordained for almost 2 years now and I work full-time as the chair of the Stockholm Buddhist Center.
How did you first come across the Dharma?
It's quite a long time ago. I think it's almost 16 years ago now. I was 13 years old and our teacher took the whole class on a school trip to a Chinese, Taiwanese, Mahayana Buddhist temple in a suburb of Stockholm. That was my first encounter with the Dharma outside the school books.
What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was quite a strong experience for me and also a strong experience I kind of didn't expect at all. So we came to this temple and we were shown the huge shrine room with all the rupas and paintings and all the rest of it. And there was this nun, a Malaysian woman. I think she told us the story of the Buddha's life, showed us the shrine room, and then we more or less just left and went back to school again. But it was strong enough for me to want to go back. So the same day I went home, fetched my train card and went back to the temple on my own, borrowed some books, talked to the nun a bit more. I even bought a mala. I have no idea why, but I wanted to have a mala, so I bought one. And I don't think I know exactly what was so strong. I think there was something about the whole atmosphere. The nun herself was kind of radiating serenity and peace. The shrine room did the same. And I think I found that to be attractive.
Mm. And then you stayed in that sangha for quite a few years.
Yes, I started going regularly straight away. And I was part of that sangha for, it was 9 years. So still in school and then after that working and so on. But mainly on the weekends, I went to the temple. Mainly Sundays, we did loads of pujas. That was the main practice we did as a sangha. And I was volunteering quite a lot, running the youth group and so on.
And what was your first experience of Triratna? What made you search outside of your Chinese sangha for something else?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't really looking for something else. It was quite not random, but I wasn't planning it. I was working full-time as an undertaker, and on the side I was studying religious history at university, and there was another student who was a yoga instructor, and she was going to lead a young Buddhist yoga class at the Stockholm Buddhist Center. And she invited me to come along, and she said, "You're a Buddhist, you're not afraid of going to a Buddhist center, and why don't you join me?" So I thought, oh, this Western Buddhism sounds exotic and interesting from my point of view back then. So I went there on a young Buddhist activity an evening.
What was the strongest impression from that first encounter?
Well, coming from a Chinese-speaking sangha and also being one of the few young people who were actually practicing and not just coming there because of your family or something, it was a combination of those two, like sitting with other young people who weren't ethnically Buddhist, but had decided to come to a Buddhist center, most of whom were actually trying to practice in their lives because they wanted to. Sitting in that circle was quite mind-blowing for me, actually. It's like, oh, I had no idea there was such a context in Sweden before. For me to meet people in similar contexts who have decided to convert, or whatever you want to call it, and so on. So that was very strong. And also, I think seeing examples of how our order members really decide to deepen their practice, but without necessarily becoming monks and nuns. Because I came from a very kind of lay monastic type of sangha, as most of them are out there in the world. And I had decided I was probably not going to be a monk, even though I had thought about it. And then coming and seeing my first order member, Satyaprabha, who's now one of my Kelana Mitras, and seeing an example of somebody really, really going for it, but still living outside of the monastery was very inspiring.
So, say something more about your friendship with Satyaprabha.
So, Satyaprabha was the center manager when I started going to the center. So, he was one of the two people, I think, working full-time at the center. So, I had a lot to do with him in the early times, and I still do, of course. We're in the same chapter nowadays. But since he was the first order member I met, and since I found him very friendly, and yeah, I found he really kind of saw me when I came, and since it was such a strong experience coming to this new sangha and seeing Westerners and young people, it triggered quite a lot in me about whether I needed two sanghas, and if not, do I need to choose one? And what is Triratna? So actually, quite soon after that first time, I met up with him with like two A4 sheets of questions about trying to compare and understand And he just patiently answered all my questions. So I think that was actually the start of our friendship, me asking him tons of questions. And he just being there for me, being available. Yeah, and it's hard to summarize like 7 years of very close friendship, but he is one of my very closest friends and now formerly one of my Kelana Mitras. So yeah, he's a very important friend and he's always there for me. I think that's one of the things that's really made a difference. I can also mention that my other KM, Kalyana Mitra, Bodhisakta, was also there. He wasn't Bodhisakta back then. He wasn't ordained. But he was also in that circle the first time. Took a bit longer before I got to know him better. But he's also in my chapter now. He's one of my Kalyana Mitras. So at least two very important friendships were already there from the get-go.
And what made you finally move to Chiratma and not stay in the Chinese Sangha?
Yeah, it took me almost half a year to decide. And it was quite painful, actually, having to make a decision, because I quite quickly realized I have to make a decision. What is it Bhante says? If you dig in different places, you won't get very far. You have to dig in one place if you want to go deeper. And that resonated with me, and I really felt I had to make a decision. But I had grown up in the other Sangha, you know, not just as a Buddhist, but as a human being as well. So very important friendships. And I really liked the tradition I was in. Then I finally came to a point where I just had to decide and leave and come here full time. And it was like the cultural, linguistic part of it. I had studied Mandarin before and in university, but I was still always in need of people to help me clarify and translate and so on. So I couldn't kind of straight away take the Dharma input in myself. And culturally, I was the only Westerner who was kind of practicing long-term with that Sangha. People came and went, but usually because of language, they dropped off or disappeared, found other contexts. But I stayed there for a very long time because I liked it and I found it helpful. But I also think I came to a point where I couldn't deepen my Dharma practice without more Chinese. So it was always like I needed more language study to go deeper in my Dharma practice. And then I came to Chiratma and suddenly English or Swedish, you know, suddenly everything was available in a very, very, very different kind of way. So that was strong. During my years in the other Sangha, I realized I was gay and I wasn't open with the whole Sangha about it because Chinese attitudes to that is, it's much more of a taboo subject. It's like you don't speak about it and then maybe it doesn't exist or something. But I had friends who knew, both my age and some older people I could confide in and talk to. And that was no problem. But then I came to Chiratma and there was a poster on the notice board about a group for LGBTQ people. And then, you know, read about Sangharakshita and the rest of it. And quite soon realized that I can actually be myself completely in my Dharma context if I come to Chiratma, which was one aspect. I didn't look for it, but it was a bonus.
Yeah.
Quite a big bonus. Yeah, those are the main areas, I think. Of course, I wanted to become a monk in my teen years. I was just going to graduate from gymnasium or high school or whatever you call it. And then I was going to go to Taiwan and become a monk. And then I came out and I realized I don't want to become a monk. So then that option was kind of closed. And then I came to Chiratma and there was a way of combining the two things I wanted to have in my life.
When did you ask for ordination and how did that happen?
I think it was less than a year after I came to Chiratma. So maybe it took like 6 months before I became a Mitra. Since I was Buddhist, I was just kind of deciding whether to go deeper in Chiratma or not. So that came quite quickly. And then when I became a Mitra, I kind of knew I wanted to ask for ordination. But I waited and then I decided to go to Padmaloka before asking. And so I went on a men's weekend. I think it was early 2012, not sure, but I think so. And as soon as I came there, I decided that when I get back home, I'm going to write my letter and ask coordination. So quite quick and quite determined to go for it.
So what did it mean for you then to ask coordination?
It meant I really wanted to be ordained. Yeah, seriously, I was quite, you know, it wasn't the kind of, oh, let's explore this and see what it is. For me, it was a very kind of strong, yeah, I want to keep deepening my practice and I want to do it in this context. And even though I was already Buddhist, Bhante really changed my life. So I wanted to commit to that. So yeah, it was an important step for me. Becoming a Mitra felt like I just wanted to do it because, yeah, I just wanted to join this context. But then asking for donation was very important.
So it sounds like you were very clear what you wanted when you asked for donation. Did that view of what it meant to be ordained change, or did it sort of stay the same, or like what was important during your ordination process? Or maybe what was the moment when you felt you were ready for ordination, and what had changed then?
Well, I think partly this kind of standard thing of really wanting it and then realizing that it's not ordination in itself that's important and the case around your neck, but the fact that you have chosen a specific kind of life that you want to commit to. I also remember my private preceptor Satyaraja saying to me that what you're doing is not necessarily focusing on joining the order, but rather living as if you were in the order, and then you will be ordained. And that was very helpful in the last phase of my training, I think, to just like, well, he was confident that I was going to be ordained, and I was confident I was going to be ordained. I didn't know when, but just this idea that, well, yeah, I'm just trying to live up to these ideals and precepts and all the rest of it, and, you know, contribute to the Sangha and so on, and deepening friendships with order members, and other mitras training for ordination, and it will kind of, it will be the only natural thing. And I think when that kind of hit me, I felt more ready as well. Like a shift of emphasis.
And the ordination itself, what was that like? And the ordination retreat?
Yeah, so I did a 4-month ordination course at Cuquieloca in Spain. When I asked for ordination, I thought I wasn't going to be able to go since I had a long-term relationship and I was working full-time and so on. So I wasn't very sure, but I decided when I asked to keep it open, even though I wasn't thinking it was going to be possible. So I'm very glad it was possible for me to go. Yeah, I really enjoyed the course. Yeah, I think particularly all the ritual aspects surrounding the ordinations itself, not just the private and public ordinations, but all the other stuff that I can't talk about, and that is part of the experience of a long ordination retreat, of course. Yeah, and just the community aspect of it. You know, I haven't lived in a community, but for 4 months we were 24 of us, including the team, living in a mountain valley in Spain, practicing, working together. And that was a very strong experience. And I felt it was a very important experience as I entered the order to have more of a sense of communal living and practicing.
So what effect do you think the ordination had on you?
It's hard to say, but it just felt so natural. It's like it was the way it was supposed to be, somehow the way I wanted to live my life. So I also think because I was invited very early, like a year and a half early, quite rare, but that was my case. I had quite a lot of time between getting my invitation and the actual course and the ordination. So I felt very ready when I came to that point. And I felt I was treated almost like an order member to some extent before I was leaving as well. So in that respect, it's hard to say that something big shifted. I was working full-time in the Sangha and so on. So it's hard to say, but more personally, what changed? Yeah, I think on one level, I take my own practice more seriously because I'm an order member. Not because it's expected, but because I expect of myself to fully take responsibility for my own mental states, my ethical life, my meditation practice and so on.
So what was it like coming back from the ordination retreat? Was it easy to come back, or was it harder?
I found it quite easy coming back. I came back to my marriage, which was still intact, and I think benefited quite a lot from just this experience of not being in touch and in the same place for a few months. Came back to working as center manager, which I was doing before, so I had a full-time job, and that was the same as before, but that was very much at the center of the Sangha, Mandala in Stockholm. I had been doing a bit of teaching especially with a young Buddhist group in Stockholm. But now I could kind of grow into that more fully. So it felt quite natural coming back.
So then you didn't have a big crisis coming back from it?
No.
It didn't seem like you had one.
But no. I don't think so.
So a year after you were ordained, you became chair here at Stockholm Buddhist Center. What made you feel up to it, maybe? Or what made you take on the challenge? It's maybe the right word.
Yeah.
Being a young person and the new ward member.
Yeah. Well, it was quite sudden, as you know. Rajadarshini, who was chair before me, was re-elected in March last year. And then, I don't know, a few weeks afterwards, she mentioned to the council that she had come to the decision to step down, not necessarily straight away, but she wanted to step down when it was possible. And I think in the back of my mind, I have been thinking, I'm center manager now. Quite a few people in the local situation seem to be able and willing to work for the Sangha full time. So maybe in the future I will be a candidate to become chair. So I had thought about it. But then suddenly, bam, less than a year after ordination, there was the possibility. And it felt like I literally looked over my shoulder and there were no other people I could think of who would run as a candidate. So it felt more like, you know, the universe said to me, maybe it's time, whether I liked it or not. So it wasn't really a decision from that point of view, but then of course I was willing to and I had thought about it. For me it was most like, do I have the support I need, you know, being young in age, being very young in the order still, but talking to chapter and preceptors and council and our president and so on, I quite quickly realized I think I had the support I needed and decided to go for it.
And what has it been? Has it been like?
It's been a very interesting year. Immediately after I became chair, we had a conflict flare up in the Sangha. So a week after I became chair, it was quite hard to deal with, especially so soon after becoming chair. But I think that has mainly settled down since then. But beyond that, it has mainly been inspiring and a creative process. I have a new center team who replaced me as center manager that I love working with. A very, very good council. Ratnadarani as our president seems like a very good fit for us and for me personally as chair. So, yeah, and I've loved the ECA meetings, the chair's assembly. It really feels like it's a context for me to keep in touch with the fact that being chair in Triratna is a spiritual practice and not just a responsibility like any other responsibility out there in the world. So, yeah, it's been a good year, but I mean, it's been an interesting year for Triratna as a whole. So, of course, it makes a difference if you're a chair as well.
So what's been the main spiritual benefit of being chair?
I've come in touch with and realized what a gift mind training is. All these slogans and verses about turning, you know, the less pleasant into something to grow from and all the rest of it. I think that's something I have worked with and I'm thinking that, yeah, it's a very good chair's practice, mind training.
And have you changed since you became chair or through being chair?
I think it would be easier for others to tell me whether that's the case or not. But yeah, I think I have. I've had to face sides of myself that I don't think I would have needed to face this year as chair.
So in your life, what does centrality of going for refuge mean to you? What does your life, apart from, I suppose you give your life to the Sangha a lot, but sort of in more more internally, like what does going for refuge mean to you and to your life?
Yeah. For me, it has a lot to do with like always coming back to the three jewels again and again and again. Like, doesn't matter if I'm in a down or if I'm in one up or whatever's going on, it feels like always coming back to the three jewels. I've decided that they're going to be my refuges, and that means staying in touch with them all the time. Feels like, for example, like making decisions, from smaller decisions to like life-changing ones. That's always been a characteristic for me, even before coming to Triratna, where it's more emphasized, but just this fact of like, okay, so what ideals are important in this situation? How do I apply them? That's on a more general level, kind of just coming back, you know, again and again, and making sure that whatever I do, I'm in touch with them.
What do you do to make sure you stay in touch with them?
Yeah, I was about to say the usual things, but like, you know, regular meditation practice, and for me, sadhana practice is very central to my meditation practice, my daily, weekly, monthly routine. I think order retreats and events are very important as well. Kind of just making sure I'm in touch with others who share the same ideals, so that when I'm a bit confused about what applying the three jewels to my life situation means, maybe I can talk to my chapter or an order day or order retreat. Also like studying and teaching. And I think they very much go together. I think I study more when I'm teaching, because then it's like natural to go deeper into something and clarifying my own perspectives and having the light of the Dharma shown on my intentions and motives, perspectives.
Do you have an example of how you let three jewels be most important in decisions, like life situations, like when you bring them back? Get in touch with them, like there something specific you...
Well, I was studying at university before I became center manager at the center, and I had finished a bachelor in Sanskrit and Pali, and I started a master's program, and that was quite important to me, and I wanted to graduate my master's. But then things changed a bit, and it came to the point where I was thinking about whether to drop my master's and not fulfill the degree and come and work at the center. And you know, it was very much kind of being torn between my worldly motives and having the degree and all the rest of it, and then just giving that up completely and going into serving the Sangha. And I think that's an example where I really took the three jewels in, and I knew by then that I was invited to my ordination course. So there was enough time for me to finish the degree and then leave for Guhyaloka. But there was also the possibility of just dropping that, starting to work at the center, go to Guhyaloka, come back and work for the center. And it wasn't, you know, on one level it was easy to make a decision, but it was quite an internal struggle. But also like seeing like what could the effects be if I continued to study. I had quite a difficult relationship with my supervisor my main teacher, who was going to, you know, supervise me when I was writing my thesis. So I was very aware that if I take the degree route, then you know, where would I be mentally when I came to Guhyaloka? So it's like just looking at all these pieces of the puzzle and just like, well, what do I need a degree? I've been wanting to work at the center for ages. Why is that? And then suddenly the three jewels shine more and more, and it was obvious that I just needed to drop the degree, and I'm so glad I did.
Have you brought the three jewels to mind today?
Yes, I have. I did my sadhana this morning. And part of my sadhana is a mudra. It's called the giving of refuge. So that was part of it, and that was... It's hard to explain how sadhana is an expression of going for refuge, but it's so obvious when you do it somehow. that's the fact.
What sadhana have you got?
Yeah, so my yidam is Padmapani, two-armed Avalokiteshvara. holding the lotus. Yeah.
Why? How come that is your thought? What are you eating?
Well, I came from a Pure Land Mahayana tradition, so I wanted all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to be part of my practice and so on. So for me, it was more a kind of narrowing down than a finding someone. But Avalokiteshvara came back again and again, and Guan Yin is quite strong in Chinese tradition. Since I had been working as an undertaker, compassion is quite a strong part of my spiritual inspiration. Avalokiteshvara happens to be the one to kind of giving, or whatever you call it, the Heart Sutra, which is a very important text to me. So like bit by bit, it just became clear that who else can it be? Then it was a question of how many arms, 1,000 or 10 or 8 or 4 or 2. So that was the part that took a while. But yeah.
So why 2 arms?
Why 2 arms? Yeah, that's interesting. I love, you know, the different arms holding different objects and all the symbolism in that. I just came back to kind of, well, why do you want all these arms, Prasadacharya? I wasn't Prasadacharya then, but thinking like that. And I was like, oh yeah, why not make everything simpler and just have a very human shape, so to speak, 2 arms holding a lotus flower. One of my favorite symbols. Keep it simple.
So what are you most inspired by at the moment? What makes your heart sing?
What makes my heart sing? I was reflecting on some of the questions beforehand, and I wrote down 3 words, and it was friendship, puja, and Mahayana sutras. And that's because we had a Sangha night focusing on Kshitigarbha and the long sutras about him. So I started thinking about the Sukhavati sutras again. Sharing an interest with Emma, who's interviewing me, about reciting them more as a practice. But yeah, devotion, shraddha, and sharing devotion and shraddha with friends. Yeah, I think I've been reflecting a bit lately about how amazing it is that we are Sangha focusing on community and friendship. Because that was something that kind of, it happened in my old Sangha, but it wasn't kind of put forward as a spiritual ideal in itself, beyond being friendly and the rest of it. So yeah, I think my heart sings when I'm with my spiritual friends, and especially in a puja with them.
I think I want to ask something which I'm not sure I can express yet, but maybe going back to that first encounter with the Dharma, and so tied in with this inspiration of like Mahayana sutras and pujas, and I don't know. So what is it that has sort of kept? It seems like there is a thread in your life and in your Buddhist practice, and that's sort of been alive through this change of Sangha as well. And I don't know, it's like, what do you make of that? What do you make of your first response to go back to see come back to the temple after your study visit, and then just stay for however many years it was?
It's a really hard one. Because even when I was in my old Sangha, there was a visiting nun that came maybe once a year to the temple from, I don't know, I think it was from Belgium or something, from a temple there. And every time she came, she asked me, you know, why did you take to the Dharma? Why did you stop practicing? And I couldn't answer. You know, I couldn't come up with anything for years and years. And she kept asking the question, like once a year at least. So that stayed with me, and kind of asking. And like, it feels like in the beginning of the interview, I mentioned the kind of tranquility, serenity, or the kind of peace in the kind of atmosphere, and the kind of the example that the nun was in the way she was living and the way she communicated and so on. But all of that feels, it doesn't feel like it makes full justice to whatever happened. And it also feels like constructions that I put on later to try and answer this question rather than actually, yeah. But I use the word religion. I call myself religious. And for me, part of that is that there is something beyond me, beyond the apparent, worldly, whatever. And I feel like I could taste something back then. And if it's the case that I couldn't pin it down then, well, why should I try pinning it down now? It feels like what you said, it's been a thread. And it's like something was triggered and it's been going for 16 years, even if I've changed sangha and everything else that's happened in between. I don't know. I think it's, yeah, it seems to have to do with Shraddha. It feels like I just trusted the Dharma from step one. And I still do. Yeah. That's the closest I can come to some kind of answer.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, not that I can think of. Feels like you've been good at asking me follow-up questions. Yeah, thank you.
Let's leave it there.
Yeah.